15. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 8:10, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for the morning show comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackanddrea.com. Jack and Drea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. And support for the morning show also comes from the University of Wisconsin Parkside, offering a master's degree in clinical mental health counseling. Work as a licensed professional counselor or mental health and wellness advocate. Details available at uwp.edu. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We have a very busy program planned today. In the first part, we're going to be talking about trauma and various means to recover from trauma and rebuild one's life in the wake of trauma. And we begin by talking about an event that is coming up here in southeast Wisconsin, not this weekend, but next weekend, next Saturday, the 16th of February, the third annual Healing Connections event. And we'll be talking with its organizer, Laura Cox, right off the bat. We'll also be hearing from Liz Arch, who is well-known in the field of yoga, and she herself has recovered from serious trauma, and for her, yoga has been a very important ingredient in her recovery, and she's written a book about it called The Courage to Rise. At the end of the hour, we're going to be hearing from Dr. Peter Dene and one of the members of his treble chorale at Carthage. They are just back from a most memorable trip to Tanzania. So we have all of that and more coming up on today's morning show, but we're going to begin with Laura Cox, who is the organizer, actually, of this event. She really created it. It's the third annual Healing Connections event on Saturday, February 16th at Kenosha American Legion Post 21, a Saturday afternoon event in which all kinds of different things will be happening and centered around the resources that are available in our community for people trying to recover from trauma. First of all, Laura Cox, we welcome you back to the morning show. It's good to have you here.
It's great to be back. Thank you.
Explain to our listeners what prompted you to want to create this event 3 years ago. What sort of void did you see in the community, or in what way was there a particular need not already being addressed?
I created this event because I personally have post-traumatic stress disorder. I have been exposed to many different kinds of traumatic experiences through my life. And one thing I saw was missing was when we think PTSD, we think military veterans. Hmm. And there are so many great veterans who are dealing with trauma and the aftermaths of PTSD, and there are so many other people who are dealing with it as well. And so I created the event to expand our conversation that we have in the community about post-traumatic stress disorder and trauma and the types of lives that can be impacted by these events. And the community really responded. So this is the third annual year. We are expanding our focus to add in more resilience techniques so that it's appropriate for not people who are just dealing with PTSD and trauma, but also people who are looking for tools and resources to bounce back from stressful situations or to deal with their anxiety or to help their loved ones deal with trauma or PTSD as well.
Hmm. And it probably is important, as you say, just to have our notion expanded of who is touched by something like PTSD, because I think you're absolutely right, although we rightfully so talk a great deal about military personnel and occasionally disaster first responders who can suffer terribly from post-traumatic stress disorder, but that does not mean it is limited to people who have been on a battlefield of one kind or another. In a sense, there are other kinds of battles that are, in a sense, more intimate, more private, that can be just as devastating when it comes to somebody's well-being. If I just may ask one personal question for you, what would you say have been one or two important means by which you have been able to come to terms with the PTSD that has been a part of your own life?
That's a great question. A lot of the tools that I've developed over time are a direct result of the career path that I chose. I went into massage therapy and I discovered this thing called emotional release, where our bodies will physically release the emotional tension when the physical tension is also released. Mm. And our emotional health will directly impact our physical health. So when I started having emotional releases in massage school, I was like, this is something that needs to be explored more. So then I started looking at different pathways to heal myself, you know, not only massage therapy, but talk therapy, yoga, meditation, journaling. Acupuncture has been a really phenomenal tool. I use natural nutritional supplements as well.
So you have created this event, this Healing Connections, as a means for people to really explore quite a number of different pathways. And it sounds like this event is not there to endorse one over the others, but just to really help people understand all of the various options that are out there for them.
Absolutely. I think it's important to have multiple tools in your healing toolbox so that you can really have a rounded approach to your trauma and PTSD experience, healing from those experiences. And, you know, some people, medication is the way to go. A medical doctor would prescribe a medication with a diagnosis. And for some people, they're not given medications, but they're not given the resources. So this is a way to bring our resources together in our community and say, hey, medication isn't your only option. Talk therapy isn't your only option. Let's expand what's available and what people think about when they think about healing from trauma. Hmm.
So tell us, first of all, we should mention that this event operates under the co-sponsorship of Acupuncture and Wellness of Wisconsin, which is your firm, the Hope Council, and also the Carthage College Social Work Department. Tell our listeners about some of the agencies and or entities that are represented at this year's Healing Connections event.
We do have people representing those organizations that you just mentioned. We also have a yoga practitioner, Yoga Tree Wellness, is going to be there. We have several different counseling services and mental health services that are going to be providing some information and tools. Just Live from the county is going to be there. They're an organization that focuses on supporting suicide prevention and supporting survivors of suicide. Mm. And it's really just going to be a phenomenal event. We also have musicians from the high school coming in to set the tone in between the speakers. And then we have food being donated from Waterfront Warehouse. Mm. The Buzz is donating coffee. And it's just going to be a great warming, like heartwarming and belly warming event.
I like that. So there are booths that people can visit, it sounds like, but then there are also speakers.
Correct.
Through the course of the day. Tell us more about that.
We have two speakers slotted for this year. They are both really phenomenal people who are well-versed and experienced in dealing with trauma. Lisa Kerman is the owner of Recovery Matters, and she is also on the board of directors for the Hope Council. And she's going to be talking about resilience tactics and techniques from her own personal experience and from her clinical experience. She's really committed to making positive impacts with people who are ready to move forward and make positive changes in their lives. And then our other speaker is John Christensen, and he is an Army vet from the Vietnam era. He served in the military in the 60s. And since then, he's taken his experience and done a massive amount of work with our veterans in the area. And he's done a lot of work specifically with the veterans chapter in Racine, the Vietnam's. He formed the Vietnam Veterans Chapter in Racine. So he's also a counselor. He's done a lot of work with veterans, but also a lot of work with trauma as well. So I think they're going to be really dynamic speakers and really fascinating people to hear.
So do people just show up for this event, or is this something they are supposed to register for? And is this open for anybody to attend, or is this earmarked for a particular population?
This is open to everyone, maybe not appropriate for young children, but there's no registration, there's no fee, it's free to the public, and it's for anyone who has been impacted by trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder, stress and anxiety. And when I say impacted, it could be a personal experience, or it could be friends, family, colleagues, anyone who would like to know more about how trauma impacts our community and how trauma can impact the lives around us as well.
The third annual Healing Connections event is coming up on Saturday, February 16th, and the doors will open at the Kenosha American Legion Post 21 at 12:30. The initial welcome is at 1:15 with the speakers kind of scattered through the afternoon. It's there and open until 4 o'clock. People, I assume, are welcome to come and go as their schedule permits.
Absolutely.
And the Kenosha American Legion Post 21 is located at 504 58th Street. And Laura Cox created this event, heads up the planning committee. And we appreciate you joining us today on The Morning Show, and certainly appreciate the fact that you've created this event. It is around a very, very important need in our community. So thank you for being part of The Morning Show today.
Thank you very much.
Here's part two of today's Friday Morning Show here on WGTD, also on the topic of recovery from trauma. And continuing our conversation about trauma and recovery from trauma, I'm so excited now to be able to speak with Liz Arch, who is an internationally acclaimed yoga teacher and martial artist and life coach, and the author of a powerful new book called The Courage to Rise, Using Movement, Mindfulness, and Healing Foods to Triumph Over Trauma. Liz Arch, first explain to our listeners how trauma has been an unfortunate part of your life and the key that you found to stepping over your trauma and into a healthier life.
Yes, thank you for having me. The inspiration for the book was really my own personal journey of healing trauma. My earliest trauma happened at age 5. It was a natural disaster, a flood, and we were rescued by our home by a boat. And just understanding how that one event alone really shaped my nervous system at the earliest age, and then moving through life kind of compounding on that original trauma and seeing kind of traumatic stress all around me, also ending up in domestic violence situations. And that trauma led to many symptoms of post-traumatic stress, hypervigilance. I was diagnosed with panic disorder and agoraphobia. So really using these tools that are in my book, yoga, movement, mindfulness, healing foods, seeing how they changed my life and seeing how these tools created profound transformations for the clients that I work with was the impetus for writing this.
One of the important points you make very early on is that healing from trauma is not linear. Often we take one step forward followed by a big step back. And I know that you have experienced that yourself, and you write about that very, very honestly. Do you think it has to be that way, or is it just that's the way it almost always is? And what is helpful in understanding that in terms of making that path towards healing?
Yeah, the biggest key for me was actually just the awareness piece, was understanding that I had been traumatized and placing it within a framework of trauma, because so many times we think of trauma as these bigger things, experiencing war, combat veterans, domestic violence, assaults, those sorts of things. And we don't often realize some of the smaller, less obvious ways that trauma can impact our nervous systems and completely dysregulate us. And I didn't have any framework for all of these symptoms that I was experiencing. Trauma was not even a part of my vocabulary. I just thought I was a train wreck of a human being. I was like, why am I so angry and so fearful, and why do I react this way? And understanding that it was actually happening on a neurobiological level really helped to create some peace within myself and to remove that big layer of shame. And that was the way in to start to let my healing unfold.
Right. You're right. One of the biggest obstacles in healing trauma is shame. And I appreciate the fact that you really spend some time delving into that. One of the breakthroughs in terms of your own approach is that you do not divide our emotional self from the physical self. And I think a lot of people tend to do that, even inadvertently. And if one has experienced trauma, then you feel like you are somehow needing to heal your mind and heal your heart, and it's all about your feelings. And you actually believe, and it is certainly proven to be true in your own life, that the physical body is a very significant part of what has experienced trauma and how we can recover from trauma, including something like the gut, which is about as different from the mind and soul as one can think. You actually call the gut a second brain. Explain this new understanding of our gut and how that is so essential to making a lasting and profound recovery from trauma.
Yes, so the gut is known as our second brain or enteric nervous system. It's made up of over 100 million neurons, which is more neurons than we have in our spinal cord. And it's actually our gut brain or enteric nervous system that actually produces 95% of our body serotonin, which is this, you know, critical neurotransmitter that often gets a lot of press in helping with depression. That's what pharmaceutical companies kind of tinker with. But it's produced in our gut. The majority of it is produced in our gut. And our enteric nervous system is also responsible for the production of 50% of our body's dopamine, which is our brain's kind of, you know, linked to our brain's pleasure and reward center. So childhood trauma can have a major impact on our gut health. Chronic stress can lead to long-term damage for our digestive system. And we know now that short-term stress really tasks our adrenal glands to produce more cortisol, spikes our blood sugar. And when these cortisol levels get out of balance and stay out of balance, it can lead to disastrous results: food cravings, fat storage, adrenal fatigue, hypoglycemia, diabetes, heart disease, and then also the mental health issues. So depression, anxiety can all play a part in this. So it's looking at foods as not just for our physical health, but really how it impacts our mental health.
So explain how something like yoga can so effectively intersect with the trauma that one has experienced. Because I think a lot of people, just from the outside looking in, would really be hard-pressed to understand any connection between the two. How has yoga made a difference for you and for others with whom you have worked?
Yeah. Yoga really creates a safe space to help you feel more grounded, present, and safe in our bodies, because trauma affects that ability. So a key component of trauma-informed yoga is really creating that space for people to feel safe in their bodies and to connect to their own breath and start to be able to self-regulate, which is basically, you know, our ability to understand and balance and soothe our own nervous system. And then there's really exciting research that's coming out that is actually now backing yoga as a adjunctive treatment to help ease symptoms of post-traumatic stress, as well as to help ease things like anxiety, depression, insomnia, chronic pain. There was a study that came out in 2014 led by Bessel van der Kolk, who's really pioneering this field, and he found that yoga significantly decreased post-traumatic stress symptoms to a degree comparable of pharmaceutical and psychotherapeutic approaches. So it's really exciting.
Let's finish briefly by having you explain how you use the term mindfulness, which is also a key component in your recovery from trauma.
Yes. Mindfulness, simply put, is just the practice of being present. So pulling you, with social media and all these things, we can be watching TV and scrolling through Instagram and cooking dinner, and it's really just staying present to one task at hand. So if you're washing the dishes, practicing mindfulness there, feeling the water, feeling the weight of the dish, smelling the soap, feeling the texture, that's mindfulness.
And of course, you put all of this together so beautifully well. And one thing we haven't yet really talked about is, although we did talk about the importance of the gut, is that this beautiful book even includes some recipes. And what difference
Yes.
do those make?
The recipes were crafted by one of my dear friends, Elise Micelli. She's a chef and a certified eating psychology coach. So she really helped to bring these foods in that can boost our mood and be really beneficial and healing to our gut in delicious recipes. So they're all there, 25 recipes in the book.
The book, again, is The Courage to Rise, Using Movement, Mindfulness, and Healing Foods to Triumph Over Trauma, published by William Morrow, the author, Liz Arch. Liz Arch, thank you so much for joining me on The Morning Show to share your story, and thank you for writing this lovely book. Best wishes.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
You bet. And the time is 8:31, and you're listening to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. I am really delighted that for this last portion of WGTD's Morning Show, I can first of all be sitting opposite a faculty colleague from Carthage College, Dr. Peter Dene, and one of the members of his treble choir, Rachel Skaransky, a freshman. The two of them are just back from Tanzania, yeah. And they had what turns out to be a truly amazing experience and a wonderful trip for the 27 members of the choir who were there for a 10-day adventure. And they are going to be performing a homecoming concert at Carthage Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock in Siebert Chapel. And it's kind of the culminating event of a weekend chock full of music with opera workshop tonight and tomorrow night, and the orchestra's homecoming concert earlier in the afternoon on Sunday at 1 o'clock. And then this very special concert that's sort of rolled into a worship service, yes. actually, as
yes.
well. So a great and meaningful celebration of what was a very meaningful experience for all who were part of this trip to Tanzania. Dr. Peter Dene, Rachel Skaransky, we welcome both of you to The Morning Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. So, Dr. Dene, I'm so glad we're having this conversation. I really didn't understand how new this trip was.
Yeah.
We should maybe explain first to our listeners that you have taken your treble ensemble from Carthage to Africa.
Actually, I've never taken a music group to Africa. I've only ever taken just groups of students.
Many of whom were musicians.
Lots of them, because they know me and trust me,
right.
have gone with me to Namibia. I've been to Namibia. I should go back and look. It's either 8 or 9 times.
Right, exactly. And in my head, that was just
yeah.
I melded that with the groups that you have conducted.
Right.
At Carthage.
We do a lot of music stuff when we're in Namibia, but never creating a performance of our own, but engaging with music with people of Namibia. Yeah.
Right. So you were telling me that 2.5 years ago, you went to Tanzania yourself.
That's right.
And it was to explore this possibility. Any particular reason why Tanzania?
Yeah, a specific one. I got an invitation from a travel agency that I use to travel with my ensembles for a very, very reasonable price to travel to Tanzania with just two other faculty from universities in the southern United States. And we were each able to kind of say, this is what we want to experience while we're there. I was a music faculty, and then there was a science person and a political science person, and we each had very different itineraries. And so they kind of took us to the things that we wanted to see. I was wanting to focus on culture and music and there were things that we did together, but there were every place we went, we had things that we were on our own with as well. And so it was really that trip that then I thought, well, this is a place that would really work with an ensemble, where Namibia is so spread out and there's less than 2 million people in the whole country. And so I know that there are, like, Luther has done choir tours there, but they usually include South Africa, and that makes it more expensive.
Right.
So this was great because it was more localized, and there are lots of people that could come and hear us.
Wow.
Yeah.
You'd never been to Tanzania before?
That was my first time in 2016, and then this is my first time with a group of students, yeah.
Wow. How long does it take to make a trip like this a reality? I mean, it sounds like right from the start you wanted to make this happen. Has it been 2.5 years in the making?
It was on and off whether I was going to do it or not, and part of it is the treble choir, as is the same with the orchestra, is not part of the regular rotation of choirs that travel internationally, and so just trying to find a spot where it would work in J term, where
budgetarily
we're not,
and budget, so on.
Yeah, exactly, and student availability and all of that stuff. So the last time we traveled was 2015, we went to China. And then before that was 2007, we went to Central Europe. So it's not a regular rotation. So then trying to figure out when that would work for everybody in the ensemble, when we could put together a budget that would help it, help the students out and all of that. And this was the right time. So I would say probably a year and a half of planning. And so I was there about 2.5 years ago and then really started focusing. And I have to say, there was one mother of a member of the ensemble who every time she saw me, because I had mentioned to the choir probably 2 years ago that was in the back of my head. And every time she saw me, she said she wanted her daughter to go to Tanzania. And are you working on it and all of that? So that was really kind of one of the driving things that made me just say, okay, I'm going to do this.
Got to do this.
Yeah.
You ended up having 27 members of your group,
right,
committing to going.
Right.
And I should think you were pleased with that number, because I'm sure this is a significant expense.
I think part of the issue is because we're not a regular rotation like the Carthage Choir or the Wind Orchestra, when someone comes as a freshman, they know that if they get into the orchestra and this year at this time, they're going. So they tend to get almost all of their members. I have 65 members in the treble choir, but the people who are in the choir or band know for many years ahead of time, and they can plan for that and
budget for it.
It's hard for the treble choir and probably the orchestra as well, if we're not part of that rotation, to plan for it. So I was hoping, because the last time when I went to China, we had 24. And so I was hoping to have at least that many, because, you know, we sing four-part music, and actually it divides more than four.
Yeah.
And to have a balance. And actually, I basically was recruiting everyone at the same rate. I wasn't going to Rachel and saying, come on, you have to go, and not saying it to somebody else, and was hoping that we would get, you know, when all the numbers came in and the individuals came in, that we had a balance across, and it actually worked out almost perfectly.
Wow.
So that was a matter of luck, but so we had a nice balance as well as a good number of people.
Fantastic. Rachel Skoronski, she is a freshman. She actually is a graduate of Tremper High School right here in Kenosha, and is a freshman music theater major at Carthage. When you heard about this possibility of the treble choir going to Tanzania, was it an immediate yes on your part? You had to do this?
Yeah, it was an immediate yes. I went home, I told my parents, and my mom was like, oh, you're going. No questions asked. She was like, how often do you get to go to Africa?
Right.
You know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I had to take it.
Absolutely. You have done some travel, but never to the Eastern Hemisphere from
never.
The sounds of it. So this is a big first. Fantastic. We'll hear more about what was all part of this trip, including a couple of safaris. Dr. Dene, I want to be sure that you have plenty of chance to talk about the remarkable collaboration artistically that was really, in some ways, the heart and soul of this trip to Tanzania.
Yeah, it was kind of a... I don't know. It was for me one of the highlights of my musical career, actually, and I hadn't anticipated it at all, other than knowing that the group was really world class, first class. But when I went to Tanzania, the day that we arrived that evening, we went to the three of us that were traveling professors went to a performance of this dance group called Ibuka. And they and I saw the performance, and then I was scheduled to meet with the head of this dance foundation the next morning, and I was so moved by their performance, and talking to the woman the next day, Anna Bussey is her name. She's actually a Canadian by birth, and spent her career as a dancer in mostly Spain, but all through Central Europe, and then retired, I think, fairly early because she seems young to me. But she moved to Tanzania and started this foundation where she goes around Tanzania to kind of the main cities in Tanzania and recruits people, auditions people to become professional dancers, and they come to Arusha, which is where we were pretty much based. It's near Kilimanjaro, and they come there, and the foundation pays for a place for them, pays to train them, and they have a place that they help a little bit with funding their life there, but they become professional dancers, and so they're basically about 18 to 22, 24. And then there was one guy, Brian, who was 27, who was the head coach. And I had originally thought that when I contacted her and said, we're going to do this, that they would do two or three of our pieces. We had a program of 14 pieces that we were singing. And I thought they would do two or three, and then we'd sing some things by ourselves, and they maybe perform a piece by themselves. And then as we were getting closer to the performance, I realized they were creating choreography for every single piece that we performed.
Wow.
And the dances that they came up with and related to the music. And I sent them a video. We didn't have recordings of us performing except for a few pieces. I found videos that were close to how I was interpreting the music and sent them these videos. And they created the dances based on these videos. And I had said, you know, I'll do some things differently, and this is the closest I could find, or this is a mixed choir, not a treble choir. And they were, it was just great working with professionals who were able to make adjustments on the fly. I decided to add a piece to the program, and we sang it once for them, and they improvised a dance that has kind of really, people who see it on Facebook are really moved by the performance, and so it was just a really unique opportunity for us, for the students to interact with these young artists, and to have these performances together with them.
Rachel, I'd love to hear what your response is, and on speaking on your own behalf, and really on behalf of the other singers who were part of this and who experienced this collaboration. What was this like?
It was truly amazing, and we made friends with all of the dancers. We're all connected. We all talk every day on Facebook or social media.
Still?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was just a really unique experience to see the way that dance and music is a universal language, even if you don't speak the same language.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And had you chosen these pieces with anything in mind in terms of what this collaboration could be?
Absolutely not. I mean, so one thing I should say, that one of the things that struck me in Tanzania when I went 2.5 years ago was, in comparison to Namibia, and you'll read this in travel books. Every travel book I've read, the women of Tanzania are not treated well. Mm. And so that was actually one of my motivations for wanting to bring the treble choir there as well. And so a lot of the music, or not a lot, but certain pieces that I picked were actually kind of women's empowerment sorts of pieces. And also talking about Ibuka, Anna has a very hard time recruiting young women to be in this, because women in Tanzania are expected to be the workers. Mm. And so they're not allowed to leave their family when they're that young, because they're expected to do the housework. Mm. And so I think we had about 10 singers, and only 2 of them were women. Incredible, extraordinary young women. One of the pieces that sticks in my head, and I have some amazing photos of, is Letitia. What was her name?
Latifa.
She danced a solo piece to this song that we sing called Warrior, which is a 3-verse song about a young girl who starts out feeling she has no power because she's a woman. And by the 3rd verse, she realizes because she's a woman, she can be a warrior and be fierce. And her dance, especially after I talked to her, she already had the dance choreographed. And then when I talked to her more about what the piece was saying, it was a really inspiring, incredible dance.
Wow.
Yeah.
Rachel, tell us about this matter of how women are treated in Tanzania and what kind of impact that had on you. In what ways does that sort of broaden your thinking about maybe issues and questions that haven't been maybe central to you?
I think that we were really able to be good examples for these women. One day we went to a home for young women who were like expelled from their villages and kicked out from their family because they got pregnant and they had a baby. So we went to this woman's home and we performed for them, and they just like lit up, and we were just there to be their friends. And I feel like we really showed them how strong we are, and I think it really inspired them to be strong and have hope for the future.
Wow.
Yeah.
How powerful is that to be part of that? And I'm guessing that when you thought about the possibility of going to Tanzania, you probably weren't even thinking in terms of it being a trip where you would have that kind of impact on people's lives.
Definitely not.
Wow. We're speaking with Dr. Peter Dene and Rachel Skoronski. Rachel is one of the members of Dr. Dene's treble choir, which is just back from a 10-day tour of Tanzania. They were accompanied by the campus pastor at Carthage, Pastor Cara Baylor, and their homecoming concert is this Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock at Sieber Chapel. In addition to these concerts and this collaboration with Ibuka, this extraordinary dance troupe, you got to see some amazing things in Tanzania, including, you were saying, Dr. Dene, 2 safaris?
Yes, we had. We didn't go to Serengeti, which is where everybody goes to. I've been there. You can see the same animals in other parks. It's just a little farther away, so it would have added expense. We went to a place called the Ngorongoro Crater, which is actually an ancient volcano that erupted, and it's just this huge crater that animals now live in, and a very lush green place. And so maybe Rachel can tell us about some of the animals that we saw. We also went to Lake Manyara, which is kind of on the way back to Arusha, which is a smaller park, but also has many animals in it as well.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was just really cool to see the way that animals act in their natural habitat and seeing them. And we were in safari cars taking pictures, like talking, laughing, and the animals just kind of walk by. They cross right in front of you like you're not even there. And they just go
like,
on.
Like
about
a, like a huge lion.
Yeah.
Or just walked right in front of our car. They're land cruisers. And the roofs come up so you can stand up and take pictures. And we saw this big male lion who just kind of was off in the distance. And eventually it was obvious that he was walking towards us and just kind of kept walking and walked right between our vehicles and just kept going like we weren't even there.
Wow.
Same thing with elephants. We had several elephants that just kind of stared at us for a while and then moved on.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've been to zoos. Explain how this was different from that.
It was so different to see the animals happy and healthy. You know, in zoos, it's not always the same case. And sure, we have, like, Animal Kingdom and Disney World, which I think is the closest resemblance of the African safaris that we went on.
For me, it kind of ruins zoos for for you ever forever because you realize, I mean, there was this pride of lions that were just laying there, and then, you know, right within distance of them are all these other animals. And just to you know, there's no fences, there's no, in Namibia they have their big national park is fenced in. Elephants knocked on the fence all the time, but it is fenced in. But in Tanzania they don't use fences. And so you just know these animals are there.
This is where they live.
Right. Yeah. And they don't care that you're there or not. And so it just is, you know, you're driving, and it this was actually kind of an extraordinary, they're called game drives when you're traveling in this environment, and oftentimes I'll always say, you know, we may not see an elephant, we may not see a lion, it almost felt like we were going, okay, now we're going to just drive over and see this lion. Okay, now we're going to go see the elephants, and now we're going to go see this hippo who you never see out of water, but this one's walking across the land to another pond, and so it just felt like it was set up for us, which doesn't really ever happen.
Right.
It was very special.
Yeah, these can be disappointing sometimes.
Right.
Sounds like you had very little disappointment with this. Wow. Tell us about the food in Tanzania, Rachel.
It was really good, which surprised me. They kept us really well fed. Everything seemed to be really wholesome and, like, grown there, fresh out of the garden, yeah.
Yeah, I think Tanzania was colonized by Germany, as was Namibia. Mm. And then after World War I, I believe, England, it might have been World War II, but I think it was World War I, England took over there. So there's lots of potatoes, there's lots of beef. There is a traditional food that you'll find variations of throughout West, East, and Southern Africa. They call it ugali there in Tanzania, and it's basically a grain. I think it's maize that you just keep boiling until in Namibia they don't make it as thick. In Tanzania they keep boiling it until it's so thick that you actually pick it up with your hands and make it into a ball and use it to kind of scoop up other things on your plate.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it is.
You enjoy every drop.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Rachel, I'm guessing that an experience like this is not just exciting in terms of what you yourself experienced, but I should think to be there with a group is really, really powerful. What do you think being in Tanzania meant for all of you collectively who went together?
I know at dinner sometimes we would all break into little groups and kind of talk about the day and how we felt. And I know something that made it really special was the fact that everyone was there to have an experience and learn something, take something away from the trip. And I think we all took way more than we ever would have expected to take away from it.
I know that there was a little hitch on the way back. Just say a quick word about this unexpected, shall we call it, adventure.
Yeah, so this has never happened to me before in all my traveling with groups. That we were in the airport at Kilimanjaro. We actually had to leave our hotel before 3 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
To be at the hotel. I mean, to be at the airport. I think our plane was scheduled to leave at 6. Mm-hmm. and there was no plane there. It was getting closer and closer to six, and then it's an airport smaller than Milwaukee, smaller than I've been in the Green Bay airport. It's probably smaller than that one even. Mm. But there was no announcement. There was no, we didn't really know what was going on. And so we started checking online and stuff, and it was apparent that our plane, it was coming from Zanzibar to Arusha, and it was delayed. And so then I had an 800 number, a 24-hour 800 number for my travel agent, and I said, can you figure out what's going on? And they called me back and said that it's delayed, that it's not clear whether you're going to make your whatever the flight. And we were flying from Arusha to Istanbul, and then Istanbul to Chicago, and it was looking like we weren't going to make that connection. And they said, but they won't tell us until you get there if they're going to hold the plane or not. And so I announced to the students, it looks like we're not going to make it. But they wouldn't tell us what was going to happen. We got to Istanbul, and as soon as we got off the plane, they handed everybody a box lunch. Hmm. As we were walking down the alleyway, there were two guys shouting, Chicago, Chicago. And so we stepped to the side, and it was just our group that was moving on to Chicago. And they said that we were booked. There's only one flight for Turkish Airlines to Chicago, and we were booked on the next day's flight, that we had to buy a visa to get into the country, and that they were going to pay for a hotel. We got supper that evening on Turkish Airlines. We got breakfast the next morning, and the transportation to this really beautiful hotel that was in the middle of nowhere. I mean, in the middle of industrial park, so there was nothing to do really. Mm. But it was a great. To have a layover, that unexpected layover. It was actually a pretty doable one.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. The pictures I saw. My sympathy for you ebbed just a little bit when I just saw how.
And it was one more thing in your passport, one more visa in your passport.
So. Absolutely, and one more chapter for your memoirs. Right. At any rate, yep. Well, at any rate, eventually you all got home safe and that's sound, right. And now get to celebrate the whole trip with this homecoming concert. On Sunday afternoon. Quickly, from each of you, one high point of Sunday afternoon's concert that you want people to really listen for. Rachel, let's start with you.
Well, my favorite song, I think we're singing first, Everyone Sang.
Yeah.
It's just my favorite song. It gives me chills every time when I sing it. There's this one part in the middle, and it's just truly a beautiful moment where I feel like time just freezes.
Hmm.
It's great.
That's what music should do.
That's great. And I'll just tell you quickly, Greg, Everyone Sang has the same words that Carthage Choir sang last fall. The World War I poem.
Armistice 1914.
And so it surprised me because I didn't think that it was going to become the piece that it became with the choir, but it really did become this piece that I think that once we really understood it and knew how the composer put it together, it became a really moving piece to sing. I would say that piece together with I realized last night after our rehearsal that we didn't rehearse Warrior. We're also going to be singing Warrior tomorrow.
Sounds like a very central piece to what this trip was all
exactly,
about.
Exactly.
Wow. So 4:00 Sunday afternoon will be the homecoming concert for the treble choir at Carthage, rolled into something of a worship service as well, led by Pastor Cara
Bailey. With a baptism, too.
Oh, wow. And she, of course, was part of this very, very memorable trip to Tanzania. Well, we're glad that all went as well as it did.
Thank you.
I look forward to taking in your homecoming concert at 4:00 and experiencing even more of the great joy that all of you experienced. Dr. Peter Dene, the conductor of the treble choir at Carthage, and Rachel Skoronski, a freshman at Carthage and a member of the treble choir and a very happy participant in this trip to Tanzania. My thanks to both of you for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. We want to remind you that the morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, which is wgtd.org. Monday's morning show will include a conversation with pianist Baron Ryan. He is the son half of the father and son piano duo team of Ryan and Ryan. They're playing at Carthage College Tuesday evening. Tuesday morning on the morning show, we'll preview an American Experience documentary about the amazing accomplishment of something called C-Lab. Dr. Danae and I are old enough to remember the days of C-Lab from the 1960s and early 70s, but it's a largely forgotten and amazing accomplishment that is explored in this documentary. We'll also be talking to representatives from the Kenosha Public Library about this year's Big Read project. And on Wednesday, I'm very, very excited indeed to be speaking with James and Deborah Fallows, who are going to be